From the top of Alto Teletris in Colombia, welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, as Von Riesel debuted an outrageous concept bike, we're asking if it's really a glimpse of the future, and if so, what does it mean for cycling and all of us riders?
It's also been a big week in the world of ultra endurance, including an announcement which looks to threaten Mark Beaumont's around the world record, another record attempt that shows how hard it all is, plus more hot new tech, and something's been banned in America's Anything Goes Gravel Race series.
This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that front suspension gravel bikes just got an upgrade.
Please allow us to introduce you to the Pinarello Gravel MX. Now for me, this is the ultimate gravel bike, and I cannot wait to get my hands on it.
Yes, Connor is a little bit excited, if you can't tell. We'll give you more details on that bike later in the show, because we also learned this week that while Mathieu van der Poel was conducting another cyclocross masterclass, this time in the World Cup in Spain, Tadej Pogačar was sending an ominous message to him and the rest of the world by posting a ride to Strava, which showed him reconning the finale of Milan-San Remo.
To be fair, for him, it's only a short spin from Monaco, plus he only got one KOM.
Yeah. I mean, 171Ks at 36K an hour average and one KOM. I mean, I tend to do that before breakfast most days. I don't know about you. Now, we also learned this week that the start of the 2027 Tour de France is, both men and women, are going to be here in the UK, with a stage in Scotland, a stage in England, and then a stage in Wales for the men.
The Welsh one looks particularly spicy, with 8 climbs, 3,000 metres of ascent. Ooh. The women's stages, of which there are also 3, quite a high proportion of the entire race, it has to be said. They haven't been confirmed yet, but they suggest they will all be in England.
Yeah. Now, lastly, we learned this week that Von Riesel, well, frankly, they've knocked it out of the park with their bonkers new concept bike and accompanying kit and equipment that they debuted at the Velo Folly show at the weekend.
It's called the FTP2, and it's apparently designed to push the boundaries of speed, aerodynamics, and integrated performance.
That sounds like marketing blurb. I think that needs a bit more like designed to push. Do you not think? That's how it was written. Designed to push the boundaries of speed, aerodynamics, and integrated performance.
That's why I need to say it, or that's what you think they should have said?
I'm pretty sure that's how it was written. I mean, admittedly, it's a French brand, but whoever wrote that press release. Anyway. What it is, Connor, is a big fat two fingers to the UCI. That's what it is. And actually the rules of the road as well, because it has a Marley motor that theoretically would be de-restricted to allow the rider to double their FTP, hence the name, FTP2, everywhere they go and not just on climbs.
I'd probably still find a way of getting dropped with it. As a concept, though, it's pretty cool, but as a vision of the future, it's definitely controversial. Is this actually the direction that cycling will be taking?
Well, there is a lot to unpack here, isn't there? But can I just start with how happy I am that Von Riesel have put this much time and effort and resource into something like this? Concept bikes used to be like a fairly regular feature of the bike industry. There are legendary examples out there that, I mean, we genuinely, I say we, the cycling nerds genuinely still talk about, like the Colnago-Ferrari collaboration with a gearbox and composite frame before composite frames were a thing. The Cannondale bike with a roller blade for a front wheel. I mean, I'm not sure that added anything to the world, but still, it looked cool.
Specialized have a long history of concept bikes too, but they've gone very quiet of late. And Canyon 2 have had some wild bikes over the years, but even their most recent one is pretty cool. But from a manufacturing perspective rather than a kind of like a wow factor.
Yes. So, I mean, I think it's probably a sign of the bike industry going through some lean years, isn't it? So, the fact that Von Riesel have come back with this is excellent, excellent news. And then what's also cool is that when you look, it's definitely not just another case of a rollerblade for a front wheel kind of a job. So here are the headline stats. I don't think this needs a funky voice.
Well, you could do the whole thing in a funky voice if you want to.
Formula One inspired cockpit. No, that allows full control from the handlebars, helping to further improve safety. Integrated developed electronics, such as integrated shoe tightening and custom lightning. Lightning? Not lightning. That would be conceptual, wouldn't it? Anyway, a shoe that reinvents rider-machine interaction, doing away with traditional fasteners and clip pedals, whilst being controlled wirelessly from the cockpit. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Advanced Win-Win textiles featuring motorcycle standard protective pads that also enhance aerodynamics and safety. And then a hybrid helmet. Yes, that was co-developed with Swisside. Apparently, they've got like an aerodynamic shell that clips directly onto your lid.
Maybe they should have kept the lightning in there. You know, like taser Ollie every time he half wheels me.
Isn't there an American car that's been like, it's got like some kind of protective thing where you get tasered if you try and touch it? I mean, probably.
Anyway, some of it, like electrically operated shoe fastenings, I'm not sure I knew I kind of needed those,
yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah, me too.
The motorcycle standard pads in the Aero skin suit, though, they sound like a bit of a bonus.
They do, yeah.
And apparently there have been a whole load of patents registered around this bike and tech, so you can be fairly sure that some of it will be on its way to a bike or kit near you.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool, isn't it? But then what about this FTP2 as a vision of the future? I mean, frankly, I would have loved to have seen UCI President David Le Parisien choking on his croissant when he saw the news being announced. And when I say that, I don't mean I literally want to see him choking.
Yeah.
Just the
we get you, Simon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
right.
So it's clear. The UCI, though, they're not going to be impressed, and nor should they be. And personally, I don't think Von Rizel are suggesting it either. But what about the gazillions of people that just want to ride and ride fast? Surely adding a motor that doubles your power output would be great fun?
Yeah, it would be great fun. Undeniably great fun. And I suspect we're probably going to be getting closer and closer to that reality each year, right? So the latest batch of e-road bikes are so light and the motor's so well integrated that it's basically like a normal bike with a turbo, right? For a lot of people, that is going to make a lot of sense because you can still ride it like a normal bike, but you just don't have to go quite as slowly on climbs.
I do think, though, that for a majority of people, adding a motor will take away the essence of cycling for fun. Commuting, no-brainer, makes sense. Mountain biking, I get the part of the thrill, just riding off-road fast, so a motor allows you to do more of that. But road is going 25 kilometres an hour up a hill. That's much more fun than going 15.
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't ride at 25k an hour, I ride at 15. And that's fun, but I would definitely say it's more fun than going 7k an hour, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
100%. But I do take your point. There is less upside on a road bike with a motor. And whilst, as you say, it makes sense for some people, it's not going to make sense for everyone. But you know what I want to know?
What's that?
Does it ride nicely?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does it actually feel good to accelerate on and to go around corners, all of that jazz? The older I get, the more I bang on about how a bike feels to ride. But I really think that for me, the speed of a bike is only as important as the way it feels.
I guess time will tell on that. But Von Rizel know a thing or two about making nice bikes. You'd imagine they would be that would be sorted. Doing away with drop bars, though, that's a bold move.
It is. But again, I mean, it's cool that this bike exists, right? With those handlebars.
Yeah, yeah.
And if aero shoes become a thing, or protective aero skin suits, then you can't see why this whole project exists.
Like, yeah.
There's logic, isn't there, behind the bonkersness?
Yeah, more concept bikes, please. Is this the future, though? I think it's a future for sure. How do we judge, though?
Well, I had a look at some car websites.
Yeah.
Not something I do terribly often, but I looked because concept cars are a huge thing in the motor industry, aren't they? And actually, a fair few of them have either directly or even indirectly gone into production. So the BMW i8, prime example, the Audi TT literally was a concept car that then got made. The Porsche 918 Spyder, the McLaren P1, the list goes on.
That's really out of character for you to be talking about cars.
Well, I mean, I'm not a huge petrol head, but I sort of dabbled in like early 2000s cars.
Yeah, my knowledge only extends to people carriers. Anyway, I think we will see bits of this, but the unrestricted motor in effectively a TT bike, no, I think it's too far away from the ethos of the sport. I don't know.
Well, what do you lot think? Get involved in the comment section down below. Be super interested to hear your thoughts. Is the Von Rizel FTP2 what the future is going to be? Is it the future you want? And if not, what is? Get involved. Do you like people carriers? Because it's basically like the bike packing version of a car. You just fill it with gubbins.
Yeah, it's
just absolute crap.
Practical car.
I dread to think what's stashed away in your car.
Just
in case I need it, I've got this particular. I can't even imagine what it is.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in there, actually.
Oh, good God. Right, get involved in the comment section down below.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with the news of Lael Wilcox taking aim at the outright round the world record, currently held by Mark Beaumont at 78 days.
Yeah, so like Mark, Lael has already gone round the world before. And like Mark, she also broke a world record in the process. But this time, she is going to be fully supported. Also like Mark, it has to be said. So the route is 18,000 miles or 29,000 kilometres, meaning that she will need to average 240 miles per day. I think it's like 360 kilometres, isn't it?
Yeah, she's hoping to achieve that. 16 hours a day in the saddle, 6 hours sleep and 2 hours for stoppages.
Yeah, I remember so well when Mark did it. That was literally his schedule as well. And it seemed like the most brutal schedule imagine. One day of it with him completely broke me. She's basically doing exactly the same. So she's essentially going to have to ride faster than him because there's nothing else for it.
Good luck.
Yeah.
I'm really interested to see how Lael gets on with this one.
Tyre technology has improved significantly since Mark Beaumont's record.
True.
So she should save at least 20 watts.
True. We've also, though, got to give a big shout out to Ashley Miles, who's just broken the women's record for the fastest time along the Pan American Highway from Alaska to Patagonia. It took 118 days to ride the 22,511 kilometres.
Can we just stop for a minute and admire her name? What a fantastic name for an ultra cyclist, Miles.
Yeah.
In fact, your name actually is a bit of a bad omen, isn't it? Connor Dunn. Yeah, done. Totally done, mate. Unless it's like, oh yeah, done. Pan American Highway, done.
Done.
Atlas Mountain Race, done.
I'm going to be definitely done now.
Done.
Oh dear. In more ultra endurance news, though, we did tell you last week about pro gravel racer Brendan Johnston was gunning for the Perth to Sydney record, all 4,000 kilometres across Australia. Sadly, he has missed out on the record of 6 days and 10 hours. It took him 8 days in the end.
Just a little over as well, I think. I did have a look to see who holds the current record, and when I saw it was Christoph Strasser, who is the... I mean, I don't even know, there's an argument, essentially the best male ultra endurance racer of all time. I did feel like it was probably a tough ask to beat it. But anyway, Brendan looked like he had the credentials, but the weather definitely did not help him.
He did, though, raise a truckload for the Tour de Cure Cancer Charity, which is, like, proper awesome.
Yeah, oh, amazing stuff. Now, at the opposite end of the spectrum from ultra riding, we have commuting. Basically, don't we? And there is some great news from Brussels, where a recent study has estimated that the number of people cycling to work there has increased to 20%.
It's still some way below the national average in Belgium, but Brussels has been somewhat notorious for its resistance to cycling infrastructure. So this is definitely good news.
It is indeed. Also some good news coming to the suburb of West Newton, just outside of Boston. So all of you West Newtonians probably thinking, well, why are we in cycling news this week? Well, we spotted that your local paper is reporting that a new bike safety plan has been agreed just, wait for it, 32 years after it was first proposed.
Yep, it's taken 32 years to agree to a city cycling and walking plan. Although it's still not quite ready. There is just one slight amendment still to pass.
Just one.
And then Newton will be able to roll out its plan. That is so slow, it's bonkers.
Isn't it just? Yeah. I mean, the world has changed quite a bit since 1990, yeah. Whatever it was, four.
That's probably some of the roads have disappeared.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah. I mean, to make it look even more bonkers, check this story out, okay? It's a fast mover. A guy called Aidan Crouch has just spent 3,000 hours out on his bike over the last 5 years to create the definitive map of where is safe to cycle in London. What a labour of love. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's quite the thing to behold. Apparently his quest began when a couple of his flatmates said they were too scared to cycle. When he tried to find them a map that would show them where was safe to ride, nothing existed. So he did it himself.
Yeah, so everyone can get access to that map, but the next step that he's hoping for is to integrate it into like a Google Maps or something like that, so that the data is essentially easier for the 8 million or so inhabitants of London to find. It's actually 8.8 million, I think, I looked this morning.
Amazing. Right, on to some fresh new tech from the world of gravel now. As we talked about in the show, Pinarello has just dropped the Gravel MX, and it's a bit of a monster.
I mean, it is a monster, isn't it? They've essentially taken the DNA of their hardtail Dogma XC. So it's got the same, quite slack for a, well, certainly slack for a gravel bike, pretty slack for a cross-country bike, 67 degree head angle and 101 millimetres of trail. interesting that we've got that stat. Anyway, and then they've fused it with the integrated Talon cockpit from their road bikes.
The result, which is a Toray M40J Carbon Beast featuring 100mm front suspension and clearance for 50mm tyres. It's designed specifically to bridge that gap between kind of like gravel speed, mountain bike capability.
Yeah. Dang it. You're going to be loving this, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm obviously absolutely loving it. Absolutely loving it. I don't know why you wouldn't love it. Why?
Well, I'm going to withhold judgment at the viewers of this show know that I'm not a massive fan of sticking drop handlebars on mountain bikes, but equally I have said, you know, before judging, it needs to be ridden.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, I sound like a broken record because I was talking about it just a moment ago, but it's all about the handling for me. Like, I get the performance advantages, but it's when you get out of the saddle, does it feel good? That's the litmus test. That's the litmus test for me, I think. Yeah.
I just like it because it's cool and quirky.
Yeah. Well, anyway, here's some stats for you. It weighs in at just over 9 kilos for a medium. And that's with a SRAM XXSL Eagle drivetrain. Presumably it's got red shifters, otherwise it wouldn't really work. And then it's got a big 1052 cassette for super steep climbs. If you want one, it's going to set you back €8,500. And apparently, currently launching the bike across Europe and South Africa. But then I guess the rest of the world will follow. Interestingly, though, Lifetime, the organisers of the biggest off-road race series in the USA, have just announced that drop handlebars are going to be banned in two of its flagship events, but particularly noteworthy, the Leadville 100.
Yeah, last year, Kate Courtney smashed the women's record with a standard Allied mountain bike, but Keegan Swenson has used a drop bar mountain bike to devastating effect in the men's race.
The last 2 years, in fact. Yeah. Now, Lifetime said in their press release that it's for rider safety, which seems a little strange, right? I mean, I think that drop handlebars on a mountain bike might feel a bit funky sometimes, but at no point have I ever thought it's dangerous, and nor, to my mind, have there ever been any accidents that have been attributed to people using drop handlebars on a mountain bike. So I sort of feel like maybe it's a slightly off move from them in the kind of like Wild West gravel scene that a lot of people seem to like about America.
It's like a kind of out of character movie, yeah, isn't it, for that?
I mean, I thought half the point was that you get these like weird Franken bikes that people like Dylan Johnson were putting together to, you know, troll me. But actually, no, more to the point, to go as fast as possible. But yeah.
It seems from the safety point. I mean, I don't know if I'm qualified enough to say because my off-road experience isn't that great, but in mountain biking, I personally can't see it being any more dangerous. I guess if you start taking it to like extremes and you have a situation where you're in like a peloton of drop bar mountain bikes all like shoulder to shoulder going down quite technical trails, then maybe it would be a bit dangerous.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're shoulder to shoulder, it's probably less dangerous on drop bars because they're like,
yeah,
mountain bike short track events, they get their blooming handlebars caught up.
But would you, yeah, I was just thinking, would it mean there's less riders on the actual track, you know, because of if you had flats, it's like, well, you're going to get two or three.
No, I see what you mean.
But with drops, you can get like five pressed in there.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't know. We'll wait and see. I'm sure there'll be outcry. So yeah, get involved in the comment section as well, because we'd like to hear your thoughts on that one. Changing the subject a little bit, here's a question for you guys. What has Jonas Vingegaard got in common with Conor Dunn? Now, not much, you might be thinking.
Love short cranks.
Yeah. Short cranks that you can now buy, actually. Jonas Vingegaard's short cranks.
Yeah,
for sale. So yes, there is short cranks, but also you both use Camelback water bottles. Yeah. Tenuous, but anyway, yeah. Jonas's will undoubtedly be matching, shall we say, as opposed to your relentless inability to use matching water bottles in spite of your fortunate possession as a GCN presenter.
It's honestly just never two in the same place. I'm like, every time I try my best and I'm rushing out the door and it's blue in the
just back. Be that guy that only ever wears the same make, model, colour, size of jeans every day. Just make it simple for yourself. You think Jonas is going to rock a purple water bottle one day? No, he's not. He's going to use yellow ones, isn't he?
It's so boring, Si. Use whatever water bottles make you happy.
I do use the water bottles that make me happy. They match. black ones, and then they go with everything.
I feel like I've held on to them for so long now, I can't go back.
I mean, it's your thing, mate. It's your thing. Yeah. Right, back to the original point, should we say. Camelback are now in the world tour once again. They've signed a multi-year partnership with Visma Lease a Bike. So that's super cool to see.
Here's an interesting story for you, Si. I think we all like a nice view when we're out riding. But there was some news on Road.cc that this would be the longest bike tunnel in Europe, and it is one step closer to fruition.
Yeah, I saw this was right. It's currently an abandoned railway tunnel, isn't it? And then campaigners have been just given the go-ahead to unblock one of the entrances so that repairs can be made to the inside. It's been shut for 60 years, apparently. And then if it gets finished, when it gets finished, you would be riding underground for over 3 kilometres. Can I be honest here?
That's a long time.
Yeah, as cool as it sounds, is not my cup of tea.
No?
I mean, even if it was dry on a wet day, I think being underground for 3 kilometres, not my bag.
Some nice lighting in there, make it quite ambient.
Maybe. Yes?
I've been through tunnels, I can't remember where, but I might be close to San Remo. There's a big tunnel, and they play music.
Well, they do in Bath.
Yeah, the one in Bath as well, they play music.
Yeah, closer to home. Yeah. Right, how's your Ruvying going, mate, your training?
It's going well. Like, better.
I love the confidence. It's brilliant.
I was on for an hour and a half last night.
Nice.
So, yeah, I think there's been no protestations from the body since I've been getting back into training. So
that's cool.
Fingers crossed, that's a good sign. And this week, I'm hoping to like push on a bit. And I'm going to turn the screw this week and see how the body responds.
Nice.
So hopefully by the end, I'll have like a bit more confidence.
Cool. Yeah. All right, that's good. And people can still join you on Ruvi, presumably?
They can. I'm literally about to join a ride in 45 minutes. So if you can, well, actually, you won't be able to because this is...
It's not live, mate. We're not live. Can someone remind Connor that we're not live, please?
Next Monday is my next ride, so you can join that one, please.
Give the game away. We film this on Tuesday afternoon, Connor.
I was thinking that's live.
Okay, cool. Well, anyway, yeah, you've got a lot of people signed up, haven't you, I think?
Yeah, we've got over 1,000 people today, if we were live. And hopefully more on the next one. So I'd love you to join. It'd be absolutely brilliant if you can ride along. Because I've been like blown away by all your support in the comment sections in the video we put out last week. And yeah, thank you so much for your comments and all the support leading this into this one. Really, really appreciate it. So yeah, it'd be great to join me for some of my last bits of training and hopefully get to the start line with a bit more confidence.
It's time now for Hack/Bodge of the Week, that part of the show where we go through cool pictures or videos that you sent in of various different hacks or bodges that you've either made or spotted out and about. We're going to start with one. Connor, I like this very much. Sent in by Signet Pete. He has converted his full suspension mountain bike to a hardtail with a crank arm. Okay. Now, there it is in the photo. It's an S-Works carbon stump jumper. He said the shock finally gave up the ghost. And after various dealerships, came up negative. What's the word?
Came up short.
Came up short, thank you. With a replacement brain for his Specialized. He decided to turn it into a hardtail and he's used a crank arm, which is apparently the perfect length. A little bit of tweaking with some spacers and liquid steel, which I did not know was a thing. And there you go. Suddenly he's got himself a hardtail.
Yeah, I like that. That's a proper hack, isn't it?
Well, I mean, arguably it's a massive bodge if you take your full suspension bike and make it into a hardtail with a crank arm. But given that we saw Visma Lease a Bike rider, I'm trying to think what his name is, the pro mountain biker, rocking exactly that on his full suspension bike in a short track. I think it's Milan Vader, I think it was. Yeah. Was it? Yeah, it was Milan Vader. Yeah, there you go.
Well, it saves a bike, doesn't it? It's not going to be ridden otherwise.
Yeah, for that's that, the thing. For that, it's a hack. Yeah. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, nice one. Thanks for sending that one in.
All right, yeah.
Next up, this is a bit of me now. This has been sent in by Peter Booth. Desperate to go fishing. There's a video link. This is essentially a lady pulling a rib with an outboard motor up to a fishing lake. Going quite fast as well. Those wheels are taking a good little bit of weight. So this is from Beezaboov. My wife and I have a small shack close to excellent trout fishing lakes. The trout fishing season opens up in August, but the gate on the roads in this area doesn't open until December usually. We overcome this issue by riding in there. My wife tows a little boat, motoring gear. She gets the job done because she's much younger and fitter than me.
I mean, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hack, isn't it? Yeah. Right there.
I don't think that's an e-bike either. It's
like... No, I was thinking an e-bike would be an excellent solution to this.
But solid bit of towing there.
Yeah, I'm here for that.
Nice one.
Yeah. I'll take this one. This next one is sent in by Dunk. Car park issues. Spotted a bloke in a car park whose bike had got run over. A rough bit of wheel alignment, and apparently it was good to go until someone turned up with another wheel. So yes, someone has submitted a GCN video to Hackle Bodge, which was where Ollie Bridgewood... Well, I was going to blame Ollie again, but no, it wasn't actually Ollie's fault. It was Connor sat behind the camera there, who left Ollie's bike behind some poor woman's back wheel and she drove over it. But anyway, remembering his scouting from about 25, 30 years ago, Ollie took the wheel out and jumped on it and got it straight enough that it would go through the forks and we were able to ride on it. So yeah, there he is, straightening a tachoed wheel. Not something you need to do anymore on carbon rims, but there we go. So yeah, fair play. Dear.
Right, this next one has been sent in by an anonymous person. So if you want to declare yourself in the comments, please do.
There's a carrot.
It looks like a carrot. But I'll read it. So I'll read out the description. Submitted anonymously and pixelated to protect the reputations of all involved. Having noticed how effective my ultrasonic bath is at deep cleaning my chains... I wanted a similar effect in my silica dip to ensure all the air is displaced from the links.
Is it not a carrot? My partner suggested using one of her high-frequency battery-powered oscillation devices, and what do you know, 30 seconds is apparently all it needs. Works like a dream and prevents those annoying chain swisher RSI injuries. Well, I'm upset that we don't know who to credit that one to, but yeah, there we go.
Do you know what that is?
It's not a carrot, is it?
So is that, that's a... That's an electric...
I had worked that out, Connor. Thank you. just didn't think it needed to be stated here on this family show.
Sorry.
Anyway, moving on. I mean, it's a hack, isn't it?
It's a hack.
Just don't let it drop inside your chain waxing pot, because otherwise I'm not sure what that would do.
It'd be well lubricated.
It would indeed. Right, let's finish up. Mike in Calgary with his cargo rack light mounts. This feels quite vanilla compared to what we've just been talking about, doesn't it? My cargo bike has a fork-mounted headlight, which is adequate for my vision, but presents a challenge for those windshield-handicapped citizens of our roads being mounted in the shadow of the wheel. So I wanted a more roundly visible mounting location at the front of the bike. Handlebars were out due to the shape and being behind the load, so I whittled... I like this. We don't have whittling very often here. I whittled notches into a piece of 1-inch aluminium tube and attached that tube to the bottom of my front rack, holding it in place with bands cut from a retired inner tube. The light is now up front, visible from both sides, and not in the way of any packages that I secure to the front rack. Well, I mean, you haven't used a zip tie, so that's good. It's involved whittling, which is also good. I mean, I don't feel like inner tubes are necessarily a permanent kind of a thing, but if it works, I think that's a hack, Mike.
Yeah, I worry about rattling. That's the only thing, as those inner tubes start to like stretch. But other than that, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, maybe you could learn welding, Mike, and then that might, or at least brazing.
I feel like this is a glorified zip tie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a zip tie just by another name, isn't it, effectively? Maybe we got to say bodge until you learn some form of, like, metal-to-metal bonding technique.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Sorry, we can't be too lenient.
Yeah, all right.
We just put through
a... Stop saying it, Connor.
Oh, Jesus. I know, it's a family term, no? It's not, is it? Well, everyone knows what that word is.
I mean, everyone over a certain age knows what it is.
That's true, actually. Yeah, no, sorry.
apologies if you're a parent now having to explain exactly what Connor means to your child. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you've got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below, and we will pick a winner from those comment sections next week. We'll start, as always, with the results from last week.
So this is a... It's like a team... Is it a team presentation?
Team presentation.
Team presentation. You've got the riders in the foreground of the shot, three riders, and you've also got a quite, like... Which is, I wouldn't describe it as an aggressive image of a rider, kind of like celebrating.
It's Paul Manier. It looks like he's doing a T-Rex impression.
Is it? It's a T-Rex. I wasn't sure if it was like a slam dunk.
Oh, maybe.
Hmm. You know, like a, yeah, F1.
Oh, it could be.
But yeah, T-Rex would be cool as well. Yeah, F1. But that's the image. So anyway, the winner, Holden Adventures, Soudal Quick Step. See giant gains after new training regiment involving pushing cars up hills.
There nice. So he did that. Yeah. He tied it in with that little nugget from last week's show.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Like right. That. Get in touch and we will get your Camelback water bottle out to you. So you can be just like Visma Lisa Bike, but cooler because it's a GCN one. Right then. The photo we're going to give you this week is from, is that the Women's Tour Down Under?
I believe so. It is a bike check of Rosita Reijenhout. Hopefully I've got that right, but I apologise if I haven't. So this is a UCI commissaire checking out whether the handlebars are the correct length out of the Tour Down Under.
There you go. All right, you got a caption in mind?
Don't laugh at this. No, I'm going to just keep quiet now.
Okay. Shall I go then?
You try it.
Right. Look, I told you, it's not the size that matters.
Yeah, this made us a start.
I think that's quite a good one, actually.
Yeah.
If you think you can better it, you probably can. Get involved, stick your caption in the comments section down below. Pick a winner next week.
Comments of the week now, and under last week's show... Caitlin Boda, 889, has messaged... I'm sorry. And Caitlin said, as the resident authority, having voluntarily married into this last name, I can say Si has the correct pronunciation, judging by his inability to say it on camera.
Thank you, Caitlin, for writing in so delicately. And yes, setting us straight. So yeah. I appreciate that very much. Mary Knapp. I'm really surprised you didn't mention Fem Van Empel in your lead segment on burnout. She's a very prominent recent example of a young, successful pro stepping away for an indefinite break. And yeah, actually, that was an omission, an oversight on our part. We talked about Fem Van Empel when she stepped away from sport literally the few weeks previously, and how unusual it was. And yeah, I completely forgot that she'd done that. So yeah, apologies for that one.
And last up, A1 White. Hey, Dan, I'm one of the two people still watching at the end of the show. Thanks, guys, and nice one.
Ah, there we go. Nice. Thank you very much, A1 White. Good to know that you're still there. And then under your Atlas Mountain preparation video, or lack thereof, Connor, Neil Shepherd said, Connor is by far the most relatable GCN presenter. 99% of us haven't ridden Grand Tours or been a national champ. You do know that Connor's done both of those, right? Anyway,
no, I think
you think he doesn't.
No, I think he's saying that.
Okay, but we've ridden in overstock garages whilst rocking a buggy, trying to fit training around being a parent and being plagued with self-doubt. So go on, Connor. We're all behind you.
Thank you. There the old rocking buggy thing on the train at work's a charm, by the way.
Does
it's
it?
Like white noise and a gentle rocking motion and
a very scary looking dad dripping sweat over the top of you. Gonna have PTSD for years after that.
But no, thanks for that. And Luan DiMaggio, 7025. So sad you got sick, but I'm very excited to ride on Ruby with you. I am a slow grandma of 69 years, but have signed up for your weekly rides. Love watching you and everyone on GCN. Cheering you on, onwards and upwards.
That's so cool.
Yeah, no, big thanks. I really appreciate that. And yeah, see you on the Ruby rides.
Yeah, thanks, Luan. Hopefully she doesn't miss the one that you did yesterday / in 30 minutes time.
Yeah, not live.
Not live. And then, hopefully by now you've seen the film that we released on Peru. So this was Connor and only Greg Flippin Van Avermaet going bikepacking in Peru. We've been desperate to watch this one for such a long time since it was shot over 2.5 years ago. So it was amazing that it finally got released. And I'm very pleased. I'm very happy that I got to see it because it was a banger. Loads of great comments under it. VW Doug, though, said, as well as great video, did you get the alpaca tattoo that you promised that you would get?
I haven't got the alpaca tattoo yet.
Yet.
But yet, I think I will. I will. Well, I said I'd do it, so I need to do it.
And so now the film's come out, now you're committed.
Now I'll do it, yeah. We nearly did it in Cusco.
You and Greg?
Well, it was me. It was just going to be me. I kind of wimped out a little bit.
Well, we say a little bit. You don't have an alpaca tattoo, so you wimped out a lot. Right, yeah. Okay.
But yeah, we'll get the alpaca tattoo. You leave it with me.
Yeah. I like this one from Predrag Vukovic. Connor is my double. We're both 2 metres tall and out of breath 5 minutes into a ride. Ah, maybe chuckle.
Keep it going.
Probably a sore point with the Atlas Mountain Race looming.
K-Savar wrote this. What did you carry in those huge bags? Looks like you have used the same kit every day and only slept in accommodations or a prepared tent. So basically, we carried everything in our bags because that whole big mountain over Salkante, we were totally on our own. So we had this plan where we had a film crew with us at the start and we left them at the very bottom. Then we met up with the rest of the guys over the other side. So we had to be really self-sufficient then. Actually, side story, I knocked myself out at the bottom of that climb as well. didn't make it into the film because we didn't film it. But I was rushing around, packing my bits and bobs, and I ran into a door frame and knocked myself out.
Was that why Greg Van Avermaet was pushing your bike? Because it was something that went unacknowledged in the film, and I only spotted it because I'm so eagle-eyed, but I'm pretty sure Greg is pushing your bike.
He carried my bike most of the way up that climb because I was absolutely just cooked. He is a machine, an absolute machine. It was far for him to do that. But we were going to stay in a tent on one night, the night when we were in the dark and the road closed and everything just went wrong. And we got to where the ride finished and Greg was like, oh, so where's the hotel tonight? And I was like, we're actually going to camp here. And then just the look on Greg's face, I said, right, okay, now we'll find a hotel.
Really?
Yeah, we were supposed to camp there. And it just, basically the road closed for so long, we just couldn't, it was like, it was so late. And then we both were kind of like, I think, pretty cooked at that stage. So we got a hotel and we had a nice pizza in town.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Pizza in Peru.
Yeah.
Eat like a local. Great stuff. Right, okay, like, in terms of what you've got to look forward to this week on GCN, a video that I've been wanting to make for a while, actually, which is I'm Too Hot. I'm Too Hot, basically. I think I've basically been dressing wrong for cycling for the last however many years. So I've been dabbling in some tech to measure my temperature on winter rides, and I've basically been overdressing.
Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm diving into that little particular nugget for Thursday's video. I thought a lot of you might find that useful / interesting. And then on Saturday, it's another one from me, actually, which is I've sort of been changing my diet slightly because I've been somewhat sceptical of this whole, like, super amounts of protein malarkey. So I've been doing a little bit of research into that as well.
Okay.
Self-inflicted. That kind of thing. So yeah, basically I'm a protein skeptic. Will eating more make a difference? That is Saturday's video.
Nice. I'll be interested to see your thoughts on this, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I can tell you off camera if you like, because that one won't be live either.
Yeah. The only thing I've noticed when I eat lots of protein is it's like very windy.
Oh, great. Thanks, then. Maybe we'll ask Greg Van Avermaet, see what his thoughts are. And then on Sunday, anyway, Lloydy was out at the Benidorm Cyclocross World Cup, the one with the Matthew Van Der Poel Masterclass. Dan did himself a bit of a hot lap to see how he would compare to Matthew Van Der Poel. So anyway, we've got mere mortal versus God on Sunday. See what happened there. I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah, that's going to be good. I'm just going
to
watch that.
Just relieved to see that Dan's ridden a cyclocross bike on a cyclocross course and not broken his ankle.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Yeah, be thankful for small mercies. Right, okie doke, that's pretty much us for the week, I believe. Connor, you better get yourself ready for a Ruvie ride that happened yesterday.
Yeah, we've got 25 minutes. Can't join me now, but hopefully he joins me yesterday.
Yeah, and next Monday is the next one, yeah?
That's it, yeah, around the same time. I believe it is 4 or 5pm GMT. We'll put it on screen now, but there you go.
Love how organised you are, mate. Brilliant. Right, see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.